Coming up, we got more convention passes to give away to the Black House Convention coming your way on Friday, July 27th. That's Friday. I don't have to say July 27th when I say Friday, but just in case you're confused. And that's courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. Get convention passes at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. And Anna Burrish is going to join us to give one of our last set of passes away. I think our last set is tomorrow. So there you
go.
Very
cool.
All right. Now, this is going to be interesting. The whole staff is excited about this.
We kind of are. We're very curious that you're in a book.
Yeah. Marina Shivrin is joining us. She is a Chicagoan and a former Chicagoan. I don't know. If you're a Chicagoan, you're always a Chicagoan, I suppose. And she has written a book called 30 Before 30. It's a series of essays. The subtitle is How I Made a Mess of My 20s and You Can Too. And Marina, this is interesting because what we have with us on this program now under this configuration of the Rogue Con Show with Anna DeVlantis, we have two millennials who are close to you in age. And they have made a mess of their 20s, and that's why they have been assigned to this program.
I'm right there with you, Marina.
Yeah.
That's awesome to hear.
I think I need to read this book, though, to see how to get to the next step, you know?
I don't know that you're really going to get to the next step in this book.
I'm in the mess part. I got that.
Yeah. This actually...
Yeah, the mess is the best part, so I would just stay there, honestly. That's my expert opinion.
So the interesting thing is that when you read this book, I think that it is, first of all, it's very, very funny. Congratulations on it. And Marina reached out to me about 6 months ago, and she's like, I'm going to write this book, and I'm writing this book, and I'm going to include a chapter on you. Is it okay? And
what'd you say?
I said, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I suppose, right?
But you don't know how you're going to be portrayed. Didn't you feel vulnerable at that moment?
Well, I don't know. I didn't think so. And so
I know I was surprised that you didn't ask to read a draft or anything, because almost everyone did, and I was like, that is so much trust that Ro is putting in my hands. I'm gonna abuse that as much as possible.
Great.
Ro's like, whatever.
Right. Sure.
Right. There's
Go
no.
Ahead.
There's
how much worse can it get?
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, you're like, do I have to show right. up for anything?
Just ask Paul Manafort. It's fine. It works out great for him.
And you have Sacha Baron Cohen's victims.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So, well, explain the book a little bit. Explain what you're trying to do here.
Sure, yeah. Well, when I was in my early 20s, I was trying to keep this blog, and I thought the best way to do it is to kind of set up a challenge for myself. So I decided to do this 30 things to get done before I turn 30 and just keep track of it on the blog. And so I did a horrible job of keeping track of it on my blog, but I did end up writing this book about it because I did end up accomplishing almost everything on that list. And it was interesting because, you know, in hindsight, you could look back and see how one thing led to another. And I had the luck of doing some pretty epic things in my 20s. So someone was giving me some money to write about it, which was awesome.
People will remember you from the viral video when you quit your job and you did sort of an interpretive dance about it. And, and it just, I mean, it just went crazy. What millions and millions of people saw it. You were on the talk show circuit. And I got asked, did you have the book in mind at that time, or did it sort of evolve from that whole experience? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, I initially always thought that this would make for a great book, but I was so early in my career as a writer. I mean, I was just keeping a blog at that point. And so when the viral video, you know, when it exploded on the internet, I think it ended up around 19 million views. So when that happened, I knew that it would open doors for me, but I was really scared I would kind of be a one-hit wonder and no one would think I had the, you know, creative talent to back up what this 1 minute, 45 second video was able to do in terms of attention. But the interesting thing is, right after that video went viral, a lot of people in Los Angeles kind of went through my blog and saw that I did have a blog post about, you know, trying to get these 30 things done. And so I initially moved out to Los Angeles because they wanted to develop it as a show, which I thought was an interesting angle, even though I always saw it as more essays about my personal experience. And then, you know, Los Angeles is a crazy place and development does not mean anything, but I was so naive. I was like, oh, developing a show, I am going to be rich and famous and have my own TV show. And that kind of, you know, got trapped in purgatory. So I was like, I'm going to try and do this as a book because I think that's how it should be. And I was lucky enough to sell it to St. Martin's Press.
There you go.
Awesome.
That's very good. And it is a series of comedic essays. It reads like a lot of comedy books, you know, throughout the years. There's a little bit of like Without Feathers in it, which is to me one of the, you know, seminal comedy books ever written, by Woody Allen. I know he's a controversial figure now, but back then he wasn't quite as much of one. And then also, you know, sort of telling your story of the things that you've done, because you went and you lived overseas. You grew up in an immigrant family here in Chicago, which is kind of funny because it's very similar to the stories that we tell about our traffic reporter Violetta, who also grew up in you bring these traditions from Europe to here, and the kids are trying to assimilate while the parents are still very much stuck in sweatpants, socks, and sandals. And you got to figure out what to do.
Enforcing the culture from the homeland, right? That you're not always necessarily embracing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I always said that, you know, growing up in an immigrant family, it's kind of like the outside world is America, and then the second you step into the house, that's whatever country you're from. And I'm, you know, was born in Russia, which is a buzzword right now, but growing up, it was like it was Russia within the walls of my parents' house, and then outside it was America. And I do agree with you, Ro, it is like you work your whole life to assimilate. And now it's really interesting because I think people are kind of craving different stories and different experiences. So I spent my entire childhood and teens trying to be exactly like all my friends who were born in the country and you know, a little bit embarrassed about my parents' different ways. And now I've kind of just completely done a 180, and I've, you know, embraced the difference and been a lot more curious about where these, you know, how much of these customs are my parents and how much of them are, you know, from Russia.
I have a question.
Yeah. Yes, Kevin.
I know you can't, obviously you don't give away everything because people should buy the book and read it. But why, did the whole Rokan chapter come about?
I know. Let's get to that part, please.
That's a great question, Kevin. Yeah. So, I mean, Ro has been, a little secret about my 30 before 30 list is some of the things on that list were from a list I'd made when I was 16 of life goals. And so I added it to this more, you know, not diluted, but a more concise list when I was in my 20s. And the Meet Rokan was always on, it was my list when I was 16, and I write about it in the chapter, but I grew up with Ro's voice in my home every day from 2 to 6. My parents had it on, and I mentioned this to Ro before, but my parents and all our family friends, they would turn on WLS to listen to, you know, English speakers to learn how to speak English. And so I only recently...
Oh, no. They probably learned some great words. Can you imagine? If you'd only known that, Ro, the pressure.
Yeah.
The Carnarvon wagon.
Carnarvon. They actually think Carnarvon's an English word.
That's a bar.
Anyone want a Carnarvon?
Yeah. That's it.
Wow. I know. Well, mixed with, like, the Russian accent and then Ro's words, I think it kind of works. I mean, no one ever understands what my parents are saying anyway. So
I know it.
Maybe.
Yeah. How do they do in drive-thrus? Pretty good?
Oh, they avoid drive-thrus.
They're eating Russian food at home.
There's
there's no pickled herring at McDonald's.
Oh.
Yeah, but now they have a new international McDonald's,
they
though.
They do?
You might be able to get pickled herring or something. I don't know. But it's a funny. There's a great chapter in her book, 30 before 30. Another one on me. I'm drinking. I'm learning how to drink and the appropriate ways to drink. And it's also really great because, you know, obviously you come from a Russian family. They like to drink vodka, but they never get drunk because they've got it figured out.
Well, how do they have it figured out?
How to sip and stay drunk.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until I was older, but it is basically insane to a Russian person to drink without having some sort of fatty food in front of you. And so when I was in college and people found out I was Russian, they were like, oh, you must have the highest tolerance. And I didn't know anything about drinking. And I did not have a high tolerance, but I realized, you know, learning from my parents as you learn the best drinking habits, it's because they always had, you know, potato salad or some sort of fatty food that they would take their shots with, which you know, I'm not a scientist, but I do think that that
kinda helps. I don't know either. But I do know that if you drink while you eat, you're better off than if you just don't eat and you drink. I mean, I think everybody knows that.
Got to spread a base.
And there's a balance in there somewhere.
Have some pickled herring the next time you do your vodka.
Yeah, I think that's what I might have
kind
to
of
do.
Mixes
yeah.
it together.
I also noticed that Russians don't take shots unless they do a toast first, and toasts are very, very wordy, like a Russian novel. So I think that they, by doing those toasts, branch out the, you know, timing between each shot, because it's like my dad just is, it's, you know, 20 minutes of talking.
So Ro was not in the how to learn how to drink section. So he's a totally different section?
No, he didn't make it. Yeah, He got his whole own section. So, Ro, have you read it yet?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Did you like
it? Is it weird?
It's, I'll tell you what, it's interesting because I had to step out and see myself as a different sort of figure because I,
right.
I'll let you explain what happens here, but it's interesting to, you grew up listening to me. And then we met because you got booked on Windy City Live, and you told the producers that you were a fan and that you wanted to meet me, and then they called me and they you know brought me in on a day I wasn't scheduled to be on to meet you.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No. It was great. I mean, because I'd been following you on Twitter, I'd seen you're very funny, you're very talented. Obviously, that video had gone very viral at that point. You were doing all these talk shows, and so and I thought it would be fun. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, she grew up in a family that was listeners and all that, and that's great. And then it kind of goes on from there. And I'll let you explain the rest of it.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I wrote about in the chapter is our initial meeting. And I do think it's really interesting because it is a one-sided relationship, which makes me sound like a psycho, but you played a big part in my growing up and I did feel like I knew you. And now through my own small way, I'm experiencing that just being a writer and putting my essays out there. You know, I have people who feel a lot more connected to me than I them. And that's definitely how I felt with you, Ro. And so, yeah, I was doing this interview for Windy City Live, and they were asking me about this blog post, about my 30 Before 30 blog post, and they were like, so you wanted to meet Ro? And I was like, yeah, I just think he's so dreamy and adorable, and right at that moment, they were like, oh, he's standing behind you right now. And I lost my marbles, for lack of a better word, and I don't know... Part of me felt like I worked in content and production, and part of me was like, this would make great television if Ro was there that day. So I had this little inkling that maybe you would be there, but the second I saw you, I was shaking and so nervous. I mean, it's so weird to meet someone you've listened to for, I think at that point, it was probably over 10 years. It's very weird to meet you that way. And I said, I mean, I know I had pictures of you. This is so strange. I had pictures of you in my locker because I thought you were so cool. And so when I was in middle school, my locker was...
Oh, God. She actually describes one of the publicity pictures that Gary and I did.
Oh. And was it with sunglasses?
There was leather. I mean, that's all you need to know. Yeah. And
I know now as an adult, I'm like, Ro, why were you wearing a leather jacket?
I know in the middle of summer, what were you thinking? Well, it was, it was the 90s and it was radio, and that's what we did in the 90s. You wore leather, and I had a Wham haircut. I don't know. George Michael was still hot. I don't know.
So did Ro say something inspirational to you? Like, what was the encounter?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously, when the cameras were on, it was very, like, I think Val was one of the interviewers, and she was just trying to, like, corral the interview and give it a little bit of structure, and I was just like, oh, my God! But towards the end of the interview, Ro was just, like, very casually, it was like, well, if you're looking for a job, you can get one here.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just, like, kind of a joking, a joking thing that you said because I had just quit my job and had no work and people were offering me gigs left and right. But then I write about this in the book, but as they throw to commercial, I kind of like look over at you and Ro and I kind of cocked my head to the side and was like, wait, what? And you nodded like, yeah, this is a real offer, which I felt bad because they probably didn't get that, you know, TV moment where I'm like crying because I got my dream job offer. I was just like, yeah, no, right. And
she turned us down almost immediately,
really?
Which was really kind of,
yeah.
You know, it was very
no,
sweet,
thanks.
Actually. Yeah, no, it's funny, though, because everybody was offering you a job. I think.
Yes, Queen Latifah
right,
offered you a job
at
some
at
of the
time.
Other shows that you went on.
And so the Windy City Live wanted me to offer a job on behalf. And then the radio show, we were like, you know, the WLS at the time was like, yeah, you know, offer a job as a producer or writer.
Uh-huh.
And I guess you, the rest of it is in the book. We'll let people go buy the book and read the rest of it, what happened.
Good
there.
Idea.
But it is, but it is interesting. It was interesting to read because of your reaction to that whole thing. And you made the right decision because it what it did is it propelled you to do something else. And that's all.
Yeah. I briefly wrote that, I mean, someone you look up to, because you gave me a vote of confidence and you were just like, I can tell you're going to do great things. And just hearing that gave me the confidence to pursue, because I always wanted to be a comedy writer, but it felt like such an out there career. I mean, it is an out there career. I'm constantly freaking out about what I'm doing next, but just having a vote of confidence from someone you respect just propels you forward like crazy. And another thing I was going to say when I was talking about writing this chapter, a lot of people were really excited about it because I do think plenty of people attach strong emotions to these reporters that they grow up with. My fiance is from Seattle and he knows all of the local news reporters and just gets so excited when he, you know, he'll still be like, oh, I saw so and so at the burger.
Yeah, they're your
you
local
know.
Celebrity kind of
yeah,
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, and so, Ro, I mean, I'm certain you've met a lot of fans over the years, but it's crazy how much stronger the connection is when it's kind of that local hometown, you know.
Yeah, because trust me, there are no national fans. I don't get a lot of those, but the but it's very charming, and I mm-hmm. and I appreciate you writing it, and you did it beautifully, and thank you so much for you know for doing it. And people should read the book not for this chapter. They should read the book for the whole thing because it's really entertaining. It's really funny, and it's whether you're in your 20s or you're in your 30s or you got kids that are in their 20s or 30s. It's kind of a great way of looking at the mind of that. So it's 30 Before 30. Marina Shifrin is the writer, and you will continue to be hearing great things from her. So congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you so much. It was such a treat to talk to you again.
Thanks, Marina. Appreciate it.
Okay,
right.
Thank you.
All right, now, do you people see that? That
is so cool how you inspired her.
Yeah, a vote of confidence would be nice once in a while.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you go on the Goodbye Girl episode this month, you'll see your picture in my locker. And I believe it's the same one you were talking about in that leather jacket with your bouffant hair.
Your bouffant. But do you call
it's
him?
It's Wham! Wham was very popular!
You are dreamy, don't get me wrong.
Dreamy and adorable, I believe, is the quote.
All right. Let's check in now. Judy, what else do you have coming up?
Taking a closer look at Illinois tollway contracts.
All right. Violetta.